Yeah. Okay, look at the answers, not now. Make an appointment to come see me if you need to talk. If you didn't read that exercise, didn't work out, or if you didn't finish, make an appointment to see me before it. There's a Phoenix in my office. I don't have any here. I have some paper towels here. What I'm expecting you to have gotten out of the remedial exercise and then over the end of this topic for today is to discover that there is a thing called a learning guide. That the learning guide is actually useful. That there are performance goals in the learning guide. And if you pay attention to the performance goals, you find out what it is that you have to do to expect guide quizzes and exams. I also expect you to realize that, you know what, if you take a step at a time, you go a whole lot farther than if you try to make all this huge leap, this and that and the other. And that it always helps to read the question and read what it is that you're thinking about. Oh, I guess the other thing is that lots of times we can do all kinds of silly things if we're trying to rush through stuff, even though it's taking us 18 hours. So we finished last week talking about the cardiac cycle. And this is the problem with the cardiac cycle. Anybody not remember that? The trauma of the weekend does not remove the pleasant memories of the cardiac cycle. Is that right?
Thank you.
Oh.
Yep.
Do
you remember?
She needs a refresher course.
Well, Husky women made 31 turnovers yesterday in their wonderful quest at the beginning of the season and lost to Gonzaga. And we found out that the young Dean was the new coach, the second year young new coach. Leaves a lot of wonderful expectations for the future because the good news is the only way they can go is up. Unlike the rest of the teams in town, like the Seahawks, I guess they do well. I guess they gave away the game. I guess the Huskies football team gave away the game. A lot of giveaways this weekend. Having talked about the heart, you can now think about what happens when the heart beats more than once. Because we talked about yesterday.
I think we want to talk about the diagnostic, because I think people had a lot of really nice experiences about it, and some people are feeling really discouraged, and some people are feeling really encouraged, and maybe to kind of get the people who are feeling discouraged or feeling discouraged.
You mean those people who last night sent me all these frantic emails? I've been working on this for 35 and a half hours, so what do you mean? What do you mean, what do you want me to do? What do you mean, what do I get wrong? What do you mean? You know people? You want to know if everyone feels safe.
Yeah.
Group hug.
Okay, you really want to talk about them?
No.
Maybe at the end of the hour.
I feel the love.
I just want to make sure people don't feel bad.
Sorry.
There could be some kind of iteration that if you show any
any type. You have to have a specific type.
You put all your name in the baby?
Was the remedial exercise a scored exercise?
No.
Were there points involved in the remedial exercise?
Yeah. Well, yes, but
no. You know, all that matters is my own education.
Am I going to grade the remedial exercises?
No.
No. Why the hell should I do it if you're not going to grade it? Well, you know what? It was an exercise. It was designed to do some things. You should have learned some things, And you kept a copy for yourself because that's what the instruction said, and we all follow instructions.
I feel very strongly that I would have had a more successful outcome had I been allowed to consult my community.
That part is true.
I think that's true.
I was upset that I wasn't allowed.
I think that's true. I think that
had you been able to consult your community, then you may have had more success with the actual answers.
No,
that's
the answer. No, with understanding
the process of
dialogue.
In terms of physiology.
I wasn't interested in getting the answers dialogue.
Well, I think that you would not have had quite the experience that you had in recognizing some of the things that you needed to do. Process, I don't think, would be quite as beneficial because you would listen to other folks and not necessarily realize what things were relevant to your individual issues.
I think the quiz was kind of hard because.
The quiz or the remedial exercise?
The quiz.
Okay.
Because in class, it's such a group, like the way they work food things, it's on a great effort, and then you don't really have any. It's not like the first time that I was like, no, we can't know anything, we can't talk anyone about it, all you, but with the previous experience that we've had before, it's quarter, it's been the whole group.
Okay. Oh, the comment was that on the diagnostic quiz, there was a shift, a big shift from let's all do this together, and let's all talk about it, let's all make sense of it all together, to, oh, now you're on your own. You have to do it yourself. You will notice in the learning guide, scattered throughout there, are performance goals. And those performance goals say, you should be expected, or you should expect to be able to do this, that, and the other for this topic. In addition to that, there is homework. The homework are problems that, in fact, involve doing those performance goals. So there were opportunities for your practice. And if in fact, we had done the diagnostic quiz as a community effort, we wouldn't have found out as much about each of us as we needed to do about what to do to move forward and improve.
It was just
a frustrating feeling from all those people who I got emails from yesterday to say, I've been doing all these things and I don't know where I am and I don't know what the hell I'm supposed to do. But part of that frustration, I guess, is also part of the process. But I'm not going to say part of the process. Part of the frustration comes about because of your interpretation of what it's about. When I ask you to look at a performance goal and tell me what it is that you think you want to find out about to be able to do that performance goal. It's not an issue of a right or wrong answer. It's not an issue of a high stakes, low stakes kind of thing. The purpose of that is to get a look at the performance goal and have you ask yourself, based on this, what is it I think I need to address and what am I going to look for? And it helps part of that. The odd is practicing new skills, but somehow I don't think this judging from the result that this is going to work out as really a money-making kind of proposition. So there are things in that exercise that are designed to do several things. One is to help you think about how you want to approach the course in the future, and it reiterates what's in the first couple pages of the learning guide where it says keys to success in physiology. Another thing is that it models one particular strategy for each of those and how to approach a particular set of problems. So for some of the multiple choice things where it said read the problem and then tell me what you think the consequence is of choice A, you know, the question is, that's one way to look at multiple choice exams. Say, okay, does A have anything to do with this? What is not, what do I know about it, but what are the consequences of that action? Will it have anything to do with the action potential or not? No. Oh, I guess it doesn't pertain to this question. Okay. There are other things in there where it's very interesting, too, is that where I say, okay, stand back, draw it, picture the apparatus, stand back and look at the apparatus like you're sitting there and it's on the table. And tell me what you see. And very often what people tell me in my office what they see is they see calcium being released. And they see actin myosin interacting. You know what? You don't see that if this muscle is sitting in front of you and you're standing there. So one of the questions that you have to ask yourself in thinking about this and learning about this is basically, what do I see happening in front of me? When a patient comes in to you, the first thing you have to decide is what this patient looks like and what it is that your anticipation is about what's going on in this patient. You have no idea what they're about. Any cases? First time out. So you have to say, okay, what do I see? And then you can ask, okay, what does it need? How does it get there? And that's what I want you to start thinking about whenever we look at anything. When we talked about the membrane potential for propagation. Did you notice how difficult it was, how difficult a time it was for people to say, I see sodium going away. I see sodium coming too. No, they said, oh, what do I think is happening? I see channels opening. In fact, you're not standing in the membrane. Over there, I see something happening, but you can't see over there. So you have to think about what this. Focus on what you target. Focus on what you see. And then you can go and say, what are the implications? I mean, you're going to find out that it's very, very, very valuable for biochemistry, for anatomy, for all kinds of other things. If you're standing looking at your dab or you're looking from out here, you can see it one way. But if you can say, okay, imagine I'm standing in between those muscles. Or say that I'm standing in the peritoneum. And I look around me to my left, to my right, and up and down. What do I see? Amazing, major help in making sense of things. It helps you focus. It helps you ask appropriate questions. So there are many, and I will tell you that if you didn't see all that stuff and you want to talk about the remedial exercise, make an appointment to come see me talk about it. We'll go over whatever you want to go over. We'll go over the quiz questions. We'll go over what that was about. We'll go over what I expected you to do. We'll go over what you did do. Some of you this morning were in there and you did some of that, and gee, you know, you were kind of surprised at how easy it was and what you have to do to think about things. Take a day at a time, it'll come along. Amy,
I have a appreciate Fosman's statement that we want to make sure that
yesterday, and the response I get is like, you're making this hard on yourself, exclamation point, like it feels like, it makes me feel dumb for not thinking the way you want me to think, and this is new, and this is different, and I'm very successful thinking in a different way, and so, because this is such a sensitive, new, tentative thing, and so for some of us, maybe some of us are really comfortable in this way, but maybe for some of us, you don't have the confidence to do that. And so even the slightest, you know, knock can take you off your feet. I don't know about everyone else, but working on that remedial exercise was the lowest point in the quarter.
Well, I guess my answer about you're making too hard on yourself was generated by a series of words that gave me the impression that in fact this was a complicated kind of, you want to make it a complicated kind of thing. And if I recall, that wasn't the first response. That was the second or third response in the conversation. And I appreciate that. I appreciate what you're saying. What I see in a lot of these cases is that folks, instead of answering the question that's asked, think about what it is that he wants you to say. I want you to say, if you honestly think at the time, without trying necessarily to think about all the implications. So my intent was certainly not to give you any kind of impression that I did not respect what you were thinking and how you were thinking. My intent in that case is after you've expressed some frustration how long it was taking and things like that, it's just some kind of reassurance to say, just take it easy. Just don't make it harder than it is. If I was not successful in that, then I apologize for that, especially if I don't feel that. It's not my intent.
I have found the remediation exercise really, really helpful. I really learned a lot from it. And I was just wondering why you don't give it to us like before, like we can have a week to work on the remediation exercise. We didn't have the take home diagnostic quiz, get it back, see what we missed, and then do the remediation exercise again. And so it's like we learn it first, and even though we're learning it in class, but I mean, like, we're able to learn it, like, by the questions that you're asking.
The purpose of the diagnostic quiz, as you will recall, is not to see how much you knew and how well you could do, necessarily, that stuff in class. It was to point out and to identify problem areas. Basically, you're saying, in some ways, the student who says, okay, tell me what you want me to tell you, and then ask me, and I'll tell you. And I appreciate that. But the purpose of that, really, in a lot of ways, is to have, in view of past experience and all those other things, is that first-year student engages in certain behaviors themselves, based on what they think their learning is and supposed to be, and what they think their courses are supposed to be. And they go along, and they're not necessarily behaving in a way that's best suited to them learning. Now, I can postpone that some more. I can't really put it earlier in the quarter because we haven't done enough to put it earlier. During the workshops, we engage in those kinds of questions, we engage in those kinds of processes, and we engage in that in the same kinds of questions on the homework. And all during the quarter, I have been available for folks to normally that doesn't happen. When it happens is when you get a swift kick in the ass because all of a sudden it didn't work out. You know, and then you're willing to pay attention to what the exercise was. And you see things, as you saw, that weren't related to physiology at all. They weren't related to the concepts. But were very helpful and were very eye-opening and enlightening. Well, what should I do now? So the purpose of that, in a lot of ways, maybe is a tough love kind of purpose. But it's there to say, we're not going to let things get too far along before things are irretrievable. And you're going to find that probably at the beginning of next quarter, based on past experience, I'm going to give you something that says advice from Odell. You know, it says exactly the same thing as we did with the keys to success, to remind you of certain things you need to research. So, I mean, I realize the way you feel, and I realize how discouraging it is, and part of the reason for that is because you're focused on this number. Okay? Well, I would tell you that in past years, on the very same diagnostic quiz, the mean was about 55%. I don't expect you to get 33% or 35%. And the fact that you do doesn't lessen my opinion of you, doesn't lessen my expectations for what you're going to be able to accomplish. It tells me here are some issues that we need to deal with. Get you to be the best that you can. I frankly don't know a better way to do that. I know ways that I can do that to make you feel better about it. But I would instead like to have you be able to recognize the things you do, because otherwise you don't move forward.
I'm sure a lot of us have questions and would love to talk to you about this. Is it better for you if we all come
Well, I think in a lot of ways it's better individually. The reason it's better individually is because each person, in a lot of ways, has a different piece. And if you do this in a big group setting, where people are mostly listening, then they listen and they say, well, yeah, but they don't really see it for themselves. If we do it together, then your words very often betray your thoughts. And we can help in that way to highlight what's important for you. You can't do it differently. So that's good. And generally, I'll try to make myself as available as I can. I was here at 9 o'clock this morning. I have my last group this afternoon at 6 o'clock.
I guess
I would tell you that the real question isn't really, can I get more questions like on the diagnostic quiz? The real question is, can I see more problems of the type that I'm going to have to deal with in future exams? Right?
Yeah, that's what I actually
Okay. Testing to see if I got what I was supposed to get from the remedial exam comes up in the discussion over and over and over again. You'll find that when we talked about cardiac muscle, the first thing we did was say, here's some permeabilities, predict what the action can be. And that's really application of what the membrane potential was, and things about channels and things about gradients and things like that. I think we are going to continue talking about the general models and gradients, things like that. And whether or not you realize it, what we did with the cardiac cycle, when you looked at those four patients, was not an easy task. Okay? And yet, most of you were able to not only follow the discussion, but most of you were able to, in your group, ask those questions and ask, okay,
what's happening here, what's happening there, what do I think is going on? So we're continually practicing those skills in the workshops. Can we move on? Yes? Yeah? All right. So we want to think today, we want to look at, try to do two things. One is, think about what happens when there are more heartbeats in a minute than just one. And so we want to start talking about cardiac output. And we define cardiac output as the volume of blood put out by one ventricle or the other, and actually both because they're both putting out the same amount, in a minute. Volume per unit. So we want to think about what is it that contributes to that cardiac output. And so, on page F33, it shows you a the building model. Here's cardiac output. And if I have cardiac output, what does that mean to me? If I'm thinking about how much blood the heart pumps in a minute, what do I have to think about? Pardon? How many times it's pumped? So the heart rate is going to contribute to that.
Size of the cavity?
How much of it can actually be used?
What do you mean by that?
The length. The area of the volume of blood that can
be used. Is it the volume? If I'm thinking about the amount that's pumped out in a minute, am I going to be concerned about the amount that the ventricle can fill?
No.
What am I going to
alert?
Maybe not all of it comes out. So what do I want to think about? How much comes out? When?
One pump.
In what?
One stroke.
One stroke.
In 1 minute?
Stroke.
One stroke.
In each stroke. Okay? So if I know the heart rate, and I know how much comes out in each stroke, then if I multiply the heart rate times the stroke volume, I'll be cardiac output. Now in this, one of the things that we can do is put a relationship here. We can say, okay, if the heart rate goes up, what's going to happen to cardiac output? And if I increase the stroke volume, what's going to happen to cardiac output? So now we have the beginning of a model to let us do that. The next question is, for each of these, and as we move back, what we want to ask is, what determines the stroke volume? The amount of blood that comes in from the atrium. Okay, so the volume of blood that comes in from the atrium. And how does that affect stroke volume? Mechanistically, how does it affect the stroke volume? Well, the reservoir.
More volume that comes into the ventricle increases the pressure when it contracts.
What causes the pressure when it contracts?
Well, it's the length of the muscle that's being stretched.
Oh, okay. So she says the volume determines the length of the muscle prior to contraction. And we could put a box in here, I guess.
Yeah, he was. What does the length of the muscle prior to contraction determine? The lactin of actin myosin. What does the alignment of actin myosin determine? The force of contraction. So we can put a relationship in here the way we did over there. Is that the only thing that affects the force of contraction? Oh, the calcium. Calcium, okay. How much calcium is there? What do we call that? What do we call that? What term do we use for the heart? Contractility. So you get the idea. So what I'd like you to do is finish this. Get together your groups, and I'll give you about 10 minutes. That would be great. Then we'll come back and talk about what you did. What I want you to do is see how many things, how far back you might go, that might lead you to look at the factors that are involved in cardiac health. What affects heart rate? Sympathetic nervous system. Parasympathetic nervous system. I want to put that on. Okay, go to it.
Expressing terms of volume for time, what two variables would you want to apply to the data? So volume is stroke volume.
Okay, so how
how does this preload influence the tension developed during contraction? So you would increase the tension developed during contraction. If you have greater preload, you have a greater force. So you have
so the greater is what
yeah. So like if the hardest thing that rests like this and then you add blood and it goes to that before you add blood and it goes to that. You add blood to the yeah. So there's more volume of pushing. Yeah, force and tension. So, how, what did we say? What factors determine the strength of contraction? Changes, right? The volume, the Yeah, we just changed the length.
So it's higher than the last one, right?
Okay. So now we do exercise two.
Yeah.
We're building our causal diagram.
Thank you. That's where it's at.
What?
How's it going, Sam?
I'm going to break.
I'm going to break.
so much. Come on.
Later, oh, now I really appreciate it, but yeah. What is it that happens to make you have that realization?
I think it's a bunch of different things. I think, one, you're in so many transitions right now. I mean, it's like you move to a new city for some of you, new friends, new people, new teachers, new school, new medicine that maybe you thought you understood and you're learning that you don't quite understand as well, or it's something, you know, it's not quite what you thought it was. And I think that was a big part of it, was just that you kind of get your feet pulled out from under you, and then once you, like, get back on top of them, things kind of come together. And I do think that, I mean, just because people say that you'll get this appreciation later doesn't mean you shouldn't appreciate it now. I mean, if some of you, you know, I certainly think that it's, you know, important not to just say, oh, because they say I'll understand this a few years down the line or whatever, that just to ignore what's going on now, if that makes sense. And I also think that, you know, you get a different body of knowledge that, you know, you're able to kind of assimilate things a little bit better, where it's not all new language or all new, you know, anatomy, you know, looking at the body in such a different and microscopic view. So I think that that's one, I think that those are the two biggest changes. One, you just get your feet back under you, and two, you just have this depth of understanding that you just don't quite have right now. So...
Other questions or comments for Anna?
Yeah.
Did you start for admissions?
I still do. Yeah, I've worked in admissions for something like 4 years, and I'm ready to graduate. It's time for Anna to leave. Although I'll probably end up being a resident or something like that, like I'll probably never leave, but yeah.
Well, you may have seen... You may have seen Ed on the back of the bus.
Yeah, I was also on the back of the bus, which our marketing department, this was last year, they asked me, oh, will you be a part of this marketing campaign? And I was like, sure, no problem, thinking our marketing department has never undertaken like a huge campaign. So it's mostly been like small, little local things. Yeah, I was on the back of the bus. That was awesome. I was smiling there, and it was absurd. I mean, my face was everywhere, and my quote was, "I really flourished here." And so I get so much crap from that. My family, my dad's like, "Oh, you know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna get my face on the back of the bus in Salt Lake. He's in Salt Lake, and I'm just gonna say I really flourished here, not have anything associated with it, just my face and that quote around on the bus."
Can you hear about all the conventions?
Yeah. Oh, go to the conventions. They're amazing.
in that you get, I mean, in the student member, the membership, the benefits are, you know, somewhat small, but I think that mostly you're just contributing to the betterment of the profession. And I'll email out, because it's January 1st is when the new membership season starts, so I'll email benefits and stuff like that. So look for an email. What else? I was so sick of hearing that. Just let me have this experience. I just want to have my own experience. But now that I'm on the other side of things, I can't keep my mouth shut. Like, tell me what's going on. Let me know. Alright, well, you guys, you know, just stick with it, and once you enter clinic, it's amazing. You'll just kind of come and it'll bring you back down and say, oh yeah, this is what I came here for. Like, now I remember. So just stick with it and make sure to call on people who are, you know, that in their fifth, sixth years, whatever, ask them questions. A lot of us are really open to, you know, giving advice. Alright,
I'm
here.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye, guys. No, there's a mail room. I'm not that crazy.
Okay. You need more time to talk about your model?
I don't know
what this is. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to use this model over and over and over again. And it's going to be a way to help us think about various kinds of issues. Okay, so you started out here with cardiac output. And we said a little while ago, what is it that determines cardiac output? And you decided that heart rate determines cardiac output. And stroke volume determines cardiac output. And where'd you go from there?
Determines pain, whatever.
Start at the top, okay? And what does heart rate depend on? Pacemaker. Pacemaker cell. What is a pacemaker? Give me an example of a pacemaker where I would find a pacemaker cell. Yes, they know. Maybe no. So we're talking about the SA node here, right? Okay, probably. Does anything influence that pacemaker cell besides the intrinsic rate of the pacemaker? Autonomic nervous system, okay? And what pieces of that am I concerned about? Sympathetic. So I'll put sympathetic here. And if the sympathetic activity is active, what happens to heart rate? Does it go down or does it go up? Make up your mind. If the parasympathetic activity increases, what happens to heart rate? And over here we said that if heart rate goes up, cardiac output goes up, stroke volume goes up, and then cardiac output goes up. Do we want to put anything else related to heart rate there? Or are we pretty well covered it? Okay, the hypothalamus receiving information, and why did they say the hypothalamus? Why did they say the hypothalamus? Because they know something that I know now. What do you think they know?
That
the hypothalamus. The hypothalamus what?
The hypothalamus maybe has hormones that triggers the parasympathetic.
Because the hypothalamus is what governs the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system. Hypothalamus does lots of other things too, we'll worry about straight forward. Okay. What does stroke volume depend on? This one here says HR. HR. It says parasympathetic activity and heart rate. It says what's coming in is what's from here, and what's going out is what's on the inside. What determines stroke volume? Muscle force determines stroke volume, okay? Muscle force. And what does muscle force depend on?
Point going.
Yep.
Doesn't stroke volume also, isn't it also affected by the volume of the muscle?
I know that not all of it can go up, but if it's smaller to begin with, then there's less possible, no matter how much force you put in. There's less.
Or if it's stiff.
What she said was, if less volume comes in, then there will be less volume going out. So let's think about what happens when less volume comes in. If less volume comes into the ventricle, then what?
There's less pressure.
Why is there less pressure in the ventricle?
Because it's not switching the muscle.
Oh, it's not pushing and lengthening. All right, what difference is the length of the muscle being?
More length you have, the length it has for better, the stronger.
Always?
Up to a point.
So the more volume I have, and the more length that I push it up, the stronger my contraction is going to be.
I wasn't actually talking about the volume coming into space. I was talking more about the actual muscles. Muscles,
like if one of the muscles is bigger or has more, its maximum volume is larger. So I guess the maximum volume that the ventricle can have before first. Like the, you were saying that the blood pressure of an elephant and a mouse are the same, but the volume in their heart chambers is very different.
Yeah. But when we're talking about stroke volume, what I heard now, and when you tell me about the volume, I have to think about the volume of a container. So the container that I was thinking about is the ventricle. That's the container. And I was thinking about the volume inside the ventricle. So I wasn't thinking about the volume of muscle. I was thinking about the volume in the chamber.
And that, I agree, but you're talking about volume coming in, and I'm not talking about... I guess the specific part of it is at its fullest capacity versus, like... being dependent on how much blood is in the atrium.
Oh.
You're saying, like, if this ventricle can fill up to 500 or something. I don't know the actual numbers offhand, but 500, and this one can, even when you pump all the blood into it, it can only go to 200, then there's going to be bigger stroke volume.
Okay.
For one person to get.
All right. So
I guess what I interpret you to say is when we talk about stroke volume here, cardiac output here, what we're talking about is the maximum amount of stroke volume and the maximum amount of cardiac output you get. But in what I thought we were doing, was saying, what is it that affects stroke volume, or what is it that affects cardiac output? Not what's the maximum, but at any given beat, then, what is it that stroke volume depends on?
But the maximum does determine the stroke volume, because if you're looking at
what happens,
different people,
but what happens,
someone has
let's think about a single individual. And in that single individual, is the volume that's filled always the maximum volume? No. So what is it? I mean, I like the idea of the volume, because you know if the volume isn't in there, it's not going to get pumped out.
Is that ventricle filling?
Is that?
I mean, is that where it would it just come before that in the diagram?
You're looking at the diagram now on the page? Okay, let's hold that for a minute until we think about what it means.
So in one person, what if you have hypertrophy of the cardiac muscle, then the chamber, the ventricle, would be smaller.
Maybe smaller. But maybe the same size and you have a thicker muscle.
Right. What if there's something that's causing the muscle to not stretch, and then you would have a decreased stroke volume? If the muscle's stiffening or something.
Why would you have a decreased stroke volume?
Say you had like scar tissue developing in your muscle.
Why would you have decreased stroke volume? Here's what's interesting about this conversation right now. Instead of thinking about how this happens, instead of thinking about the mechanism, what we're hearing is, oh, what kinds of things are associated with a change in stroke volume? Okay. So what we're thinking about, what we want to think about, is what is responsible for that stroke volume? Why would an increased scar tissue result in less stroke volume?
I'm trying to ask a question.
Okay.
I'm asking the same question.
Because I have the muscle.
Well, I'm saying, if you can't get as much stretch, then you won't be... If volume means volume in actual space, which is what we're trying to say, then if you have a smaller space and you have a smaller volume, that's affecting stroke volume.
But muscle force affects the stroke volume.
Sorry?
Muscle force affects the stroke volume.
But you can have
what
a big thing that just goes like this. You can't put in any liquid. You just have a big space that it can't actually contract.
So now we've heard two things. We've heard that stroke volume depends on muscle force. And then we've heard that if I have scar tissue, the ventricle isn't as compliant. Which means what in terms of muscle force?
Less force.
Why less force? You don't have the passive force, so if there's less compliance, and whatever volume in there is not going to push out the walls as much, right? And what effect does that have? So what you said is force the muscle force depends on the volume that's in the ventricle. You said stroke volume. So stroke volume, you said depends on the volume that's in the ventricle before contraction.
No, I suppose maybe one factor,
and
I'm wondering why it's
being excluded. It's not being excluded. This sounds like it's being excluded.
Right, which I'm now getting.
Okay, so.
So when you say it's not being excluded, do you mean that it's not directly affecting the stroke volume and it's in fact leaning more towards affecting the muscle force? Can you say that specifically?
Yes.
agency.
Well, what
you have to tell me, because you're the one that has to tell me.
It's true, but sometimes it's like taking that language barrier away really helps to where we're not just struggling.
Yeah, I'm trying to ask you that. I'm not giving you an answer. I'm asking a question.
I thought you were giving me
an answer. No, I
just didn't.
That's why you have to raise your voice.
I didn't hear that question, Mark. Is it?
Okay. I was asking.
My name is Modell.
Seriously, if I'm giving you an association and wondering why something's not there, and you're just.
But what I'm trying to do, what I'm trying to do is to get you to think about what's happening. Just wait. About thinking about the mechanism. So what we came up with here. You started out by saying if the ventricle is less compliant, then it won't pump as much. My question then was, what is the mechanism that would explain that?
I think I kind of understand what you're saying. Because I think if I think about it, correct me if I'm wrong, the heart is full of the volume, but depending on the force behind it, determines how much of that volume is actually going to leave the ventricle and how much is going to return. I guess how much is actually leaving.
How much is leaving, right?
So the connective tissue determines how much is going to leave because it also determines the length, which also determines the force.
Sorry, let's go back to repeat what you said.
So
what you said was, let me try to repeat what you said. She said was, the stroke volume is how much leaves the ventricle. And that depends on how much force the ventricle develops. And one of the things that helps determine how much force is developed is the alignment of actin and myosin. And the alignment of actin and myosin depends on how much volume is in the ventricle. Right? And to some extent, then, the compliance of the ventricle. Because if there's a lot of scar tissue, then that volume in there is not going to create enough force to align the actin myosin. There's too much scar tissue. So what we said was that the muscle force depends to some extent on the alignment of actin and myosin, and you told me that was related to the volume in the ventricle just prior to contraction. And you said that was the alignment. Is that what you said? Sorry?
It's
on the diagram. Volume of the ventricle prior to contraction. And I had alignment of actin myosin.
So what Fatima was saying about the scar tissue that prevents the volume from contracting if you do it in optimal alignment.
No. It wouldn't be preventing it from contracting if it's optimal. It would be preventing it from stretching that muscle to its optimal, or closer to its optimal alignment. And so the force of contraction would be increased.
Could you repeat that? Mm-hmm.
You might not believe, but Adama said, if the ventricle is not as compliant, there will not be as much volume. Okay? And what Charles said, if there's not as much volume in there, then the muscle fibers have not been moved out toward their optimal alignment. And as a result of that, the force of contraction will not be as great, and the volume ejected will not be as great. Okay?
question about coming on the diet. Has anything else affect muscle pull?
Yes.
Yes. What might that be, oh pray tell?
Calcium concentration
in the cytosol. What do we call that?
Contractility.
What affects cardiac contractility? What affects cardiac contractility? What would cause there to be more calcium entering the cell? More gates open. What might cause more gates to open? More calcium coming from the neighbor, possibly, but if we're talking about the whole muscle.
Longer action range.
So let's think about it. What is it? Sodium gates. Is there anything on our diagram that might have anything to do with cardiac contractility? Oh, the sympathetic nervous system. Wow, okay. So if we have sympathetic outflow, then why does that happen? What is it the sympathetic nervous system does to that trigger muscle that we decide? It increases calcium ion concentration inside the cell by increasing the permeability of the cell to calcium.
You
said
one more
downtime?
One more
downtime. You said the sympathetic nervous system affects ventricular muscle cell to open calcium channels. And so the intracellular calcium concentration increases. There's more calcium available for contraction, and the force of contraction increases.
How does it do that?
In the simplest sense, by opening some big gate chain.
So,
that receptor is more important.
So, it opens
the big gate channel instead of the receptor. Oh, by the leap? She says, does it do that by releasing more neurotransmitter? No, it does that by releasing neurotransmitter. Hit those synapses. So the implication there is that the sympathetic nervous system on ventricular muscle is not necessarily active all the time. And by increasing the sympathetic outflow to that ventricular muscle, we can either increase or decrease contractility.
The mode of action of the sympathetic system has on the heart is just the act differently in the case of yourself than at just a regular cardiac muscle cell?
The action of the sympathetic nervous system, is that what you're asking, on the pacemaker cell is slightly different than on ventricular muscle cells. So we have sympathetic nerves going to atrium and ventricle. We have parasympathetic nerves only going to atrium, none going to the ventricle. Okay? And what we've said to make life easier for ourselves is that regardless of what might really be happening with sympathetic innervation in the pacemaker cell, we're going to assume that it behaves as if it's only increasing calcium permeability. might do something with the sodium current, but it doesn't help me put things together. What helps me put things together is if I remember the calcium permeability of both atrium and ventricle are affected by sympathetic nervous system, it unifies that model. Okay, so far so good. What determines the ventricular volume prior to contraction? How much blood comes from the atrium? And what determines how much blood comes from the atrium? And ventricular filling depends on, what did you say?
Venous pressure.
Yep. Venous pressure? Or more directly? Atrial pressure. Okay? And we'll talk about this as a whole lung, so we'll say right atrial pressure determines ventricular filling, which determines the alignment of actin and myosin, which contributes to muscle growth. And in that model, we also have the compliance of the ventricle. We won't put that in this model. We're going to start calling atrial pressure, right atrial pressure, and the volume of the ventricle prior to contraction. We're going to put a specific term for that. We'll worry about it a little bit. Cardiovascular gradient. So now we can use this model to do all kinds of things. We can say, okay, what happens to cardiac output if the amount of calcium, cardiac contractility, decreases and if ventricular filling increases? We could say, we could ask ourselves, selves, what do I predict might happen if cardiac contractility decreases and filling pressure increases? Not right now, and I'll tell you why. Because we're going to find out. Why would you want to consider resistance affecting stroke volume? It's a good thought. What's the rationale? What would you think resistance, arterial resistance, or arteriolar resistance, or downstream resistance? What effect do you think that might have on stroke volume, and why? Create a back pressure.
So then they don't have to overcome that pressure to be able to move anything.
So why will less get moved? So he said if there's back pressure and arterial pressure is higher because of higher downstream resistance, he said that was because of their back pressure. If there was a back pressure, then it would have to increase the pressure.
I'll just say that there's less of a gradient.
Yeah. Oh, they're maybe the same gradient.
It's like there's pressure pushing in towards the ventricle and it's trying to move blood in a certain direction. When it contracts, it's less likely to move it at the same rate.
That's fine. She says, let's say that that pressure is higher, so it's pushing back from the toward the ventricle, and so when the ventricle contracts, it's not going to be able to push out as much.
Why wouldn't that mean that there's also less of the gradient? I thought that made a lot of sense.
Well,
it does make sense.
You said no, there might be the same gradient.
Well, it might be the same gradient.
But the thing is we're talking about upstream, downstream, but it's a closed system. So if you're restricting the stroke volume out of the heart because of, I don't know, a smaller pipe for whatever reason, then that's ultimately going to impact the fill rate on the other end coming into the heart. All closed. So you're not going to
chitting and tying, but I think I really like this. I really like this whole the argument and where you're going with it, but I think we have to think about why. But.
If the force or the resistance is higher, then it's going to take more force from the muscle contraction to reach that load, that, what do you call it, the force, right?
Yeah.
And so the longer it takes to get up to that level of force, the shorter amount of time is spent at that force. The force is decreasing.
So,
I saw the long.
Let's think about what she just said.
Saying more time in isovolumic contraction.
What she just said was, if I go back to this cardiac cycle, if I go back to this cardiac cycle, she said it was, if this pressure is higher, then, Alex was saying the same thing. If this pressure was higher, then what Kelly said is going to take longer for the ventricle during contraction to reach the pressure to open the valve. Now, it may mean that the gradient is reduced, but it may not mean the gradient is reduced, depending on how much pressure the ventricle creates or generates. What Kelly said was that if, in fact, it takes longer for the ventricle to create enough pressure to open that valve, how much time is there left for ejection?
Not very much.
Less time. And why is there less time? Why does it just contract longer?
More time in isovolumic.
Not because of time in activation gauge, because of what?
More of it's just being spent at the same volume in isovolumic, and then you actually get force in isotonic contraction at a shorter time.
So she says there's more time spent during isovolumic contraction. How come there isn't more ejection? Why doesn't this just continue on until the blood's gone? Okay? She says because calcium availability in the cardiac muscle cells is going to be pumped back into the sarcoplasmic reticulum. And so another way of saying that is, what is it that determines the length of contraction? Is it the amount of force that's developed?
Calcium pumps.
No. Is it the amount of blood that's in there? No. What is it?
Calcium pumps.
Action potential. So the action potentials don't change, and more of the force, if this pressure is higher, more of the force that is developed, or more of the contraction is devoted to developing force to open up that valve, which means that there is less contraction time left over for ejection. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah.
Where did you see that yesterday?
Frog muscle.
Where did you see that yesterday? How many people did physiology yesterday? What were you looking at?
Frog gastrocnemius.
The remediation exercise. And you had a muscle, skeletal muscle, where we had isometric contraction and isotonic contraction. Now we have an isovolumic contraction. And a shortening. Analogous to the isometric contraction, analogous to the shortening. Okay. Does that make sense? So, in this case, we can't really say whether or not an increase in resistance, downstream resistance, would significantly change stroke volume unless we have some idea about how fast that pressure can generate. And what we will see later on is that unless the pressure gets very, very high, unless this arterial pressure gets very, very, very high, that ability of the ventricle to contract to overcome it is not really compromised very much. We'll come back to that later on. So
So that's why we don't necessarily include resistance at that point in that model. But we're going to use that model and ask you about what happens in the heart, what happens to cardiac output, we're going to add another aspect to that model to talk about arterial pressure. And we'll do that tomorrow. Questions? Comments? We'll collect cards. Don't forget your name tag. I would ask you folks to do me a favor. And that favor is, if you see folks in the other section, and we have days like today where Anna came in and we are doing what we just came in, share those comments with the other folks because
people could come in that often the other section. I don't know if it's a version of the thing that's in there.
We're better.